This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
As I was listening to Kevin Harlan and Kurt Warner on the Westwood One broadcast of Monday Night Football, I was thinking, oh yeah, it's time. It's time to start reeling in our next appointment with Kurt Warner. We only ask for him once a year, but last year was literally the highlight of my 2020 when we were able to get him on the show. He was such a good sport. We talked to him right after he got off the air on a Monday Night Football broadcast. If I remember correctly, they were in Los Angeles, and he hopped on and did a conversation with us. We recorded it because it was actually, it was funny because it was like recorded an hour before we got on the air, but we recorded it because that fit his schedule and he was on a satellite line. So it was clear as day. It almost felt like he was in the room next to us. And so to hear him along with Kevin on Monday Night Football, I'm thinking, yep, it's time. So we have reached out to Kevin Harlan because Kevin does the show a couple times a year. He's always so much fun. We get him to laugh and tell stories that he doesn't tell anywhere else. And we'll start working on Kurt Warner as well, the Hall of Fame quarterback who is just one of my absolute favorites in the broadcast industry. But boy, I am not the only one who loves him because he has become a superstar in media. He's like Boomer Esiason, just a few years younger, where he's got his hand in everything. Yeah, he's got a brand new movie out about his career that started, it started so unconventionally. He played in NFL Europe, now defunct NFL Europe, before he ended up winning a Super Bowl and MVPs. And the way that he was bagging groceries before he got into football. I mean, there's just so many amazing elements. He's literally a rags to riches story. And he's also got this brand new venture called QB Confidential, which I heard him and Kevin talking about on Monday night. And it's essentially this kind of inside look and inside education about what it means to see the game through a quarterback's eye. So if you enjoy the Monday Night Mannings or you enjoy listening to Tony Romo kind of break down what he sees on a football field, even as the ball is being snapped, well, QB Confidential is for coaches, it's for athletes, but it's also for lay people, media people, analysts, and apparently it's been greeted with rave reviews. So maybe if I promise Kevin that we'll talk about QB Confidential. No, he'll do it. We just have to, Kurt. Kurt and Kevin. They'll do it. We just have to set it up with them. So it'll be fun to grab them. And a little bit later this week, former NFL Executive of the Year and longtime general manager and front office exec Randy Mueller will join us. And we are getting close to the trade deadline. If you hadn't heard, there are several teams now that are at least putting in offers or discussing the possibility of trading for Deshaun Watson. So same team, same usual suspects that we've been talking about since last year, but the Miami Dolphins and the Carolina Panthers, and according to sources around Deshaun, so not him specifically, but people who have leaked this information in a timely fashion. Remember, he has a no trade clause, and so he has to okay the team that he is sent to. But according to the sources say Deshaun is actually open to various trade destinations, not just Miami and Carolina, though those were two that he was interested in going back to the offseason. So the trade deadline is coming, even as we get set for week number 8, week number 8, which is no longer the midway point, right? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Do you need to know what it takes for a home to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can. You guys are amazing. Thank you so much for caring about my life outside of the football show and the radio studio. This is certainly something that I've asked myself in the past. Why am I talking about sports when you all seem to care far more about my personal life? My family, my dog, my crazy cat, my cooking, my activities, my adventures, my travels, my challenges. It seems like when I talk about my personal life, it tends to get far more traffic and far more interest. But sports is what they've hired me to do, so I suppose we'll have to mix in some sports as well. So the mountain climbing excursion, if you listened to me last week, you know was one that I was really nervous about. I've never done anything like this before. But the way that it came about, just give you a little bit of background so you kind of understand the context. I've, over the last year and a half, gotten into hiking because my brother and sister-in-law are big into hiking. So I've done some scattered hiking adventures with them in Virginia. They've come up to New Jersey. We've gone into upstate New York. And then I recently did a hike with a group along the Appalachian Trail in Pennsylvania. And so, and then when I grew up in New Hampshire. So we would hike in the White Mountains. We would hike sometimes in the Green Mountains in Vermont, mostly in the White Mountains though, in New Hampshire. I decided that I wanted a big time challenge though. I don't know what it is about this stage of my life where I keep agreeing to these physical challenges. For instance, half marathons. I didn't run my first half marathon until I was 40 because I don't know why. I just wanted to prove to myself that I could do it. And I don't play basketball a lot anymore. I was playing softball for years in adult leagues. And so that kind of fed my competitive nature. Golf certainly helps. But when you get older, there's not as much of an opportunity to play team sports, right? And so I needed some new challenges. So half marathons became my thing. And I'm still planning on running long distance, either a half or potentially a full in the spring. Because, again, I like to challenge myself and try to do things that I've never done before. I have no idea why. Goals motivate me. That's one reason why. And I like to push myself and test myself. I'm probably in better shape now than I've been since I played college basketball because of all this crazy stuff I've been doing lately. Anyway, I digress. So after some of these hikes, I decided I was ready for a real challenge. And so I asked a friend of mine from church, his name is Jeff. He's an avid hiker. If I could tag along on one of his forays into the Catskills. So I had mentioned this last week. There's something called the 3500 Club, where there are, I think, 30 different peaks that are at least 3500 feet or taller in the Catskill Mountains, which are located in upstate New York. He's done the majority of them, maybe had a half dozen left. And he wanted to knock out 3 of them on one big hike. It was a doozy of a plan. So he proposed it to me and he said, these are 3 peaks that are at least 3,500 feet. We're going to do them all at once. It's a combination that is popular in the Catskills. The long hike stretches point to point. So as opposed to going up the mountain and then back down, you park a car at one end and then you park a car at the other end and you go from point to point. Nearly 10 miles. And he told me it was a 4 out of 5. I would hate to see what a 5 was. He told me it was a 4 out of 5. 3 mountains with a variety of terrain and topography, culminating with the tallest peak in the Catskills. Now, I've said this to Jeff. I said this on our hike. He purposely tricked me, I think, because he originally told me that the peaks were 3,500. Then, oh, wait a minute, Slide, which is the last mountain. Oh, it's actually 4,000. Come to find out, it's 4,200 feet. And he didn't tell me that until we were halfway through the hike. Anyway, I was nervous. I didn't know if my new brand new hiking boots would do the trick. I didn't really know what to pack. I wasn't sure if I could handle it. Would I be able to get all the way through this without completely coming apart? Would I have the stamina and the endurance and all of that? So the unknown makes me a little nervous, like it does for a lot of us. But I'm a planner, so that's how I navigate the uncertainty. So I did a lot of research, a lot of reading, a lot of prep. I asked many of you hikers for advice and suggestions, and ultimately, none of that could have prepared me for what I encountered on Saturday. All right, so I was awake at 4:45 in the morning on Saturday. I went to bed actually long before Houston and Boston got into the third inning. So I missed all of game six of the ALCS. I watched it later on DVR. But I was in bed at 9:15 and I woke up around 3:30 in the morning, tried to get back to sleep, didn't get back to sleep with a lot of success because I was too excited and too nervous. Up at 4:45 a.m., finished the packing, and got out the door after eating breakfast, walking the dog, feeding the zoo, yada, yada, yada. Got out of the house at 6 a.m. sharp. We met up on the New York State Thruway, which for those of you who don't know, goes straight north out of New Jersey, New York City area, goes straight north into upstate New York. And it wasn't long before there was no more cell signal. So I don't know how, there's a lot of people that live in Ulster County, which is where we were. We were without cell service for 12 hours. I do not know how people live without cell service. I mean, I get it. I grew up without a cell phone, but now it feels like if you don't have cell service, you're just completely disconnected from the rest of the world. Anyway, so it took us 3.5 hours to get up there and to get the cars at either end. So this should indicate to you how long the hike was or how strenuous the hike was. We parked our car, my car, his car actually, at the what would be the end of our hike. And then we drove my car to the beginning. It took us 40 minutes to get from one point to the other by car. So that alone was a dead giveaway that this was going to be some kind of a day. Anyway, we set out from what is called the Woodland Valley Campground near a small town of Phoenicia, New York. It's nestled in the mountains. It's gorgeous. By this time, of course, it's light out. It's 9:30, and we start out at 9:30. The first mountain is 3.5 miles of sloping trails upward. So it's relentless because it takes nearly 4 hours of climbing, but it's not extreme, if that makes sense. So it's, I wouldn't say it's a gentle slope because you're climbing essentially in those 3.5 miles, you're climbing 2,500 feet, but it's not this drastic kind of straight up in the air climbs that we would encounter a little bit later on the hike. So you climb steadily for more than 4 hours to get to the top of what is Wittenberg Mountain, and the elevation is 3,780 feet. So in this initial stretch, there are rock formations. There are certainly different kind of cliff faces that you have to scale. But in almost every case, there were limbs, there were branches, there were rocks that were jutting out that I could grab. So all giving me really good leverage, not to mention I had fresh legs. But even on these first 3.5 miles, it's arms, it's legs, it's hands, it's footholds. I mean, it's a full body workout. So we get to the top of Wittenberg and it is the most gorgeous view of the Catskills. The sky was blue, but it was dotted with white clouds. The fall foliage was in full bloom. The reservoir, which feeds most of the Hudson Valley, it's you can see the entire thing. It's miles and miles long, and you're up so high, you can see the entire thing. So that was really amazing. We stopped for 10 minutes. But only 10 minutes. I had made a peanut butter and jelly, baby. And I had a bunch of trail mix. And I was rationing my water. I had a banana as well. But we only stopped for 10 minutes because this is the first mountain. And it's now close to 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So we've been hiking from 9:30 to about 12:30. And then took a little break, kind of walked around the top of Wittenberg. But we started to wonder if we were going to have enough daylight to finish the other two mountains. So we didn't rest very long. We essentially just ate and went. So then we did this relatively quick jog down before we started up to the next mountain. Now, here's the unique thing about Wittenberg and Cornell, which was mountain number two. The trail is only 0.8 miles that brings you down Wittenberg, not all the way, but partially down Wittenberg and then up Cornell. That should tell you, Cornell, steep. Because in order to get back up to 3,700 feet in such a short distance, it's not a slope. It's an incline. It's rock faces. So this is where we got into serious scaling of cliffs. And this is where you really had to stop, take a breath, look at these cliff faces that towered above us and figure out how you get up there. And you go slow. And actually, Jeff and I developed this great system. We would take turns. Either he would go up first or I would go up first. And we would take pictures of the other. So it's kind of funny. If you had seen our phones afterwards, I have all these pictures of Jeff and he has all these pictures of me, just so we weren't passing phones back and forth. But yeah, at some point, we even had to take off our packs to kind of wedge our way through a very narrow rock formation called, I kid you not, the Cornell Crack. That's what it's called, the Cornell Crack. And I will post a couple photos. It's famous, actually. You can Google it, and photos of the Cornell Crack will pop up. The pictures don't do it justice, though. I mean, you stand at the bottom and you gaze upward, and it towers overhead. So in the photos, because your phone is tilted upward, you don't get the full effect of what it's like to stand at the bottom of this Cornell Crack, where you can find footholds or places to put your fingers, but ultimately at the very top, you're literally scaling rock face, and you're kind of hoping that you're wedging your boots in between the two sides of this rock formation and looking like Spider-Man. So yeah, it was pretty amazing. I don't know that I've ever been so proud as the moment when I finally scrambled up to the top, probably as proud as I've ever been crossing the finish line at a half marathon, because it was strategy, and it was, I wouldn't say it was scary, but it was a little nerve-wracking. I mean, you have to be sure that you've put your foot in a place where it can support you and that you're grabbing onto something with your hands, your arms, that isn't going to give way. It helps to have long legs. It helps to be able to take these high steps. So Jeff is probably about a half foot shorter than me. So it helps. Like, he had trouble in some cases doing a high step up to the next level of these rock formations. Whereas with me, I can sling my leg up there and kind of find some leverage and drag myself up. So the actual distance between Wittenberg and Cornell, only 0.8 miles, but we got our first introduction to scary rock formations where you're going up the side of cliffs. Also, probably the only moment where I got really nervous about getting lost in the wilderness. So we get up to the top of the Cornell Crack. Haha. And we follow what appears to be an obvious trail around the left side of this mountain. But we go about 500 feet. We see this trail, seemingly a trail that goes up above us. But we have not seen any markers in quite a while. The markers were probably every 50 feet or so. They were really good about putting markers every few feet so that you could see them. They were bright red. Problem is, there were so many trees out there that if you were looking at the wrong angle, you wouldn't see the marker behind another tree. So we get off to the left on this path, and I said to Jeff, I haven't seen any markers in a while. I think we should look for a marker before we go any farther. And so he said, all right, I'll climb up there and I'll see if there's any markers. I go back to the last point at which we'd had a marker, which was probably 500 to 600 feet back. And all of a sudden I'm alone in the woods. It kind of dawned on me what it would be like to get lost out there and have nobody else with you. So I go all the way back to where we had kind of taken that left turn, and there's a marker. I look up. The next one is above my head, right? So it's up. It's not to the left. So I start yelling, Jeff, you guys know I'm loud, right? Jeff, he doesn't hear me. He doesn't hear me till I'm almost back to him. So yeah, you can understand how easy it is to get lost if you're not paying attention to these markers. And multiple times we took a wrong turn thinking it was a path, only to, after a few steps, say, hey, wait a minute, there's no red marker here. Let's go back and find the last one. So it was really easy to get turned around and think you're following a path, and it's not a path at all. Anyway, we get to the top of Cornell. That was a really steep ascent, and there's a few places to take photos, but we wanted to keep moving again. We wanted to make sure that we had plenty of daylight. So the trail leading off Cornell and toward the final mountain was Slide Mountain. It was actually a nice change of pace. We were making good time. I wouldn't say it was all down. It was kind of sloping down and then back up, but it was more foliage, brilliant colors. I was able to eat snacks while we were walking here and drink water. There were people camping, so we were walking through camping areas as well. We, in fact, encountered a bunch of backpackers who were coming in to spend the night or were coming in as through hikers and would be moving on the next day. So I'm thinking, wow, maybe the worst is behind us. And then we get to this point where clearly the trail starts to ascend again. And I look up and there is this mountain looming overhead. I mean, straight up in the air. And I say, as long as we aren't going up there. And Jeff's response is, that's exactly where we're going. OMG. I'm not kidding you. The next half mile, more than 1,000 feet of elevation in a half mile. Up, up, up. We did nothing but go straight up in the air for a half mile. I swear I thought we were going to climb all the way to heaven. It was just up, 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 up. Whether it was rock formations, whether it was boulders, whether it was trails that were literally built into the side of the mountain. There were even places where they couldn't do trails, and so it was logs turned into ladders, and they'd been worn by years of the elements and foot traffic. I mean, it was taxing. That half mile pushed my lungs and my legs to the absolute limit. So that, I mean, there were times when I had to stop and double over just to try to catch my breath. I mean, not wheezing, but pretty darn close to it, and I'm in great cardio shape. So that half mile was... that was probably the greatest physical challenge that I've ever endured. It was grueling, but then you get to the top of Slide Mountain. It's, oh, by the way, the air's thinner because it's 4,200 feet roughly. And so you get to the top of Slide Mountain, gorgeous views of the entire Catskills, really amazing, and cold, by the way. So you're sweating like crazy because you've climbed these 1,000 feet in a half mile on the side of a mountain. And then the second you stop to take pictures or get water, you start to get cold because it's 35 degrees up there. It was gorgeous weather though. So I had multiple layers. I was constantly taking off my light hoodie and putting on my fleece. I had a ball cap on, then I'd put on my winter hat, gloves on and off, on and off. Anyway, so we made it to the top of Slide, 4,200 feet. Then we had 3 miles to go. The first mile, no biggie. Soft trails, kind of navigate some mud, pretty easy. We're making good time. We know we're going to get back to the car before it gets dark. All of a sudden, everything changes. 2 miles left. This was the only part of the hike that I hated. I mean, it was brutal. What did you say, James? You can say it on the air. What would you like me to do?
Break and tease.
Oh, he wants me to take a break and tease. Okay, so the last 2 miles of the hike, I'll finish afterwards, but it was, again, the only part of the hike that I absolutely hated. We could have prevented it from being so brutal, but we didn't. Anyway, thanks for listening. I do have a bunch of photos that I'm going to share with you. They're a lot of embedded into my blog. I'll definitely put them up on Tuesday morning on both Twitter and Facebook. But I'm excited to relive it and to share it with you. And I appreciate so much that you're interested in the story. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Baby, there's nothing holding me back. You take me places that tear up my reputation, manipulate my decisions. Baby, there's nothing holding me back.
Amy's taking your calls at 855-212-4CBS.
There's nothing holding me back.
Good morning, Amy. Thank you for taking my call. I love your show. You help keep me awake and alert.
Hey, Amy. How you doing? Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to congratulate you by the way that you have been the program tonight. I woke up about 1 something. Oh. I've been with you ever since.
Hey, God bless you, Amy.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great.
Hey, Amy. I love listening to you.
Hello?
Hello?
Hey, Amy. How you doing? First-time caller. Love your show. Love you. Wonderful. In the words of Ric Flair.
Woo!
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
By the time we got to the top of the third mountain, I had wobbly legs. That's what the half mile of 1,000 feet ascent in a half mile. That's what that did to my leg. So when we stopped at the top of Slide Mountain, which again is the tallest in the Catskills, to take a couple photos, and we would talk to whoever we encountered. We actually didn't cross paths with more than 30 people, say, the entire time, the whole 9.9 miles. We maybe passed 30 people total, but we would stop and talk, and it would give us an opportunity to kind of share our experiences and ask them. You always ask, where are you headed? We actually encountered this couple. This is really weird. It's a little bit odd. We still can't figure out what was going on. If it was a date or something, and if this guy like roped her into something crazy, they were doing a 14 mile loop. We encountered them around 2 o'clock in the afternoon. They had only been hiking for 2 hours and still had 11 miles to go. So clearly they were going to be hiking in the middle of the night. What is the point of that? Not only can you get completely lost, but if something happens to you, there's no one to help you. Just, yeah, that was weird. There, you encounter some strange people out there on the hiking trails, but it's kind of a fun community. People, as they say, backpacking in with large packs and tents to go and camp. And in some cases, they're hiking through. They're not going in and coming out. Didn't see a lot of dogs, kind of steep for most dogs, but there was one father-daughter combo who had a pair of, I think they were golden doodles, and they were so happy. They're up and down the trail, up and down the trail while we were talking. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. I appreciate your responses. So there was only one part of the hike that was terrible, that I would never want to do again, or that we would at least do differently. When we got to the point at which we're 2 miles from the parking lot, so we're thinking, the worst is behind us, right? Instead of a trail, the path opens up to about an 8 to 10 feet wide. It looks like an old road, maybe a logging road where trucks used to go up and they would harvest logs and they would take them back down, except that it's overgrown now and it's covered by rocks. And I don't mean big rocks. I don't mean boulders that are firmly planted in the ground and that are stable. No, I mean just rocks. And so the rocks are loose and they're unstable. And they're covered by leaves. And so you can't actually see anything you're stepping on. So for 2 miles, not only are we going on a pretty steep descent, you cannot take a full step. Because every single step that you take, a rock moves out from underneath your foot. So my ankles are constantly rolling. My friend hyperextended his knee. I mean, it was so unsteady that you felt like you were going to fall over at any time. And so you couldn't take a full step because you didn't have the confidence that rock was going to support your weight. And so those last 2 miles, you're picking your way or up and down these rocks or around these rocks. And not only is it hard on your feet and hard on my toes, so you're going down the whole time. So your toes are kind of, butting up against the edge of your, or the front of your hiking boots, but you don't have any stability. And it was really scary, actually. And so we encounter this group of, I believe they were Chinese. They were definitely Asian, this group of Asian young people. And they're asking us questions about how much farther to get to the top and how is it? How's the hike? When we told them it was about an hour and a half to get to the top, one guy's like, "Can I come back down with you?" Anyway, so that last 2 miles was really difficult. It was 2 miles of rocks. But as I say, nothing that was firm or steady or level. You were constantly stepping on rocks that were sticking at different sizes or different levels out of the ground. And it was really scary. We never once thought to use his poles. He was carrying poles. We're such dummies. We just, at this point, you're tired, our legs are shaky, and we were really just trying to get out of there without getting hurt. So we get down to the bottom. By the way, Producer James, you were right. Not only was there a sign-in book that was enclosed in a metal case that you had to sign in your name, your phone number, how many in your party, where you're from at the beginning, But at the end, you had to sign out. So Jeff took photos of me both signing in and signing out. But you're right. And I don't know how they check, especially for hikers who go point to point, if they compare the books. But yeah, there are thousands of names in there. I mean, it went back to the beginning of the year. So we were on kind of the last pages. But yeah, you signed in at the beginning. You put the time, the date, if, whether or not you're going to stay overnight or you're going to be done with it, you know, with the hike in one day. So it took us 7 hours and 45 minutes. We left the first parking lot of the first trailhead at 9:30 in the morning. We got back to his car at 5:15 in the afternoon. So we made it 9.9 miles in daylight, and I had just run out of water. So what I didn't want to do was carry a ton of water in and have it make my pack even heavier. But I had saved that half mile of going straight up in the air was really taxing. So I wanted to guzzle all the water I had left, but I saved it. I rationed it. So I had two swigs left for the final 3 miles, but I made it last. So that's probably one thing that I would do differently is take fewer snacks and more water, because I didn't eat all the snacks, but I had beef jerky. I had trail mix. I had a peanut butter and jelly. I had some bananas. I didn't need nearly as much food as what I took. But you know me, I'm always worried about food. Water, I could have taken more of. But yeah, it was an amazing experience. Not a whole lot of animals. So we didn't encounter any wildlife except for birds and squirrels and chipmunks. Last story that I will tell you is how I came out with a knot on my head. So these rock formations that you're climbing, in some cases they have these overhangs. And yes, you're looking up to kind of figure out what your next step is, but you're essentially doing one level at a time, right? So there was one particular rock formation where the only way I could get up on it was to step on a tree branch that was kind of next to it, a limb that was embedded into the rock, and put my knee, I had to get on hands and knees to get up to the next level, because that was the only way that I could kind of, there's an overhang on a rock that I could kind of wedge myself underneath, and you know, then you crawl out to get to the next point. So I get on my hands and knees, and then I start to stand up, bang, right into the rock overhang that was above my head. I knew it was there. That was the reason I was on my knees, is because it was too, you know, it was too cramped of a space for me to stand up in, but I didn't get out from underneath the rock before I tried to stand up. So Jeff is at the bottom. So I exclaim, ow, like it was really, I mean, it's a rock, obviously it's a boulder. And I exclaim, and he's like, come down here. We need to check your head. I'm like, I'm not coming down. I just got up here. I'm not going back down.
So you can do it again.
So anyway, it did throb for a bit, but I had a hat on. And so that kind of absorbed some of the blow. I had a cap on. Thankfully, it didn't really hurt much after that. I didn't have a concussion. But when I got home that night, I was washing my hair, and I'm like, oh, there's a bump back there. I still do have a bump back there. Anyway, we had great weather. It only spritzed for maybe a few minutes. We were worried it was going to all out rain, but it didn't. Just spritzed for a couple of minutes, and awesome, awesome pictures. So I'm excited to share those with you. Thank you for, if you hate hearing my personal stories, thank you for putting up with these last few minutes of me telling you my mountain climbing story. As I said, there's a blog post that I'm almost done with. It's got a lot of pictures. And by Tuesday morning, I promise you, there'll be photos up on both Twitter, A-Law Radio, as well as on our Facebook page. So I appreciate that you guys care about me away from work. Thank you for that. And yes, I definitely will attack another mountain climbing challenge somewhere in the near future. Now maybe I'll have to hike all 3,500 peaks in the Catskills. I'm so crazy. What happened to me? I don't know when I became this daredevil. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast. Here on After Hours, we like you as much as you like us.
Phone line.
How you doing? I'm a first-time caller.
Great.
I admire your wisdom and knowledge.
Hi, Amy. You're my late-night girlfriend. I love your show.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great.
For those that listen, just want them to know that you are the superwoman of radio sports.
Oh, you're sweet. Thanks.
Good evening, Amy. Great show. Now you're stuck with me for a long time.
Stuck is a great way to put it.
Give me a buzz tomorrow night, too. Thank you.
Oh, well, I appreciate the warning.
Amy, how you doing?
I'm great.
Hey, I love your show so much. I'm a super horn. And you jerk
it out. This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Shut up, hush your mouth.
I don't think my grandmother likes it when I say shut up. I don't say it to her, of course, but I'm not sure she is a big fan. So I remember my maternal grandmother, too, used to tell me, you don't say shut up. You don't tell people to shut up. Oh, goodness. I miss my maternal grandma. And I still have to call my paternal Grammy, that's Grammy Helen, and tell her all about the hiking. She's just going to say, oh, my gosh, over and over, Amy, oh, my gosh. And so she doesn't have a computer or a cell phone or any type of technology. The only way I Skype with her is when someone from her community takes a device into her apartment, props it up on a table, and has it already turned on. And so she can't really see any photos except for when I email them to my uncle and he takes his iPad and shows her on the iPad. So I'll have to do that so she can kind of understand. But yeah, the elevations, the physical demands of the climb, it was exhilarating. I mean, it was, you want to talk about endorphins. It was amazing endorphins, but it was also exhausting. And I don't know that I could do it again before another, say, 6 months or so. Now knowing what's in store, I would do that hike again. I guess you could be more prepared that way, but I definitely have caught the hiking bug. So I appreciate all of your tweets, A-Law Radio. I did just share one photo, and producer James is going to put it up on Facebook so that you can see it. This is the Cornell Crack. You can see all the way, almost all the way down to the ground, how far it stretches down behind me. So we're talking about multiple levels of cliff faces. And ultimately, the crack, which is where this rock formation got its name, is the last part you have to navigate before you get to the top and the boulder, which kind of serves as a plateau. And so I was thinking really hard in this photo about how to get up to that next level and where to put my hands and my feet. And yeah, it was such a neat challenge. It's cerebral as well as physical. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. Jeff is listening in California. Welcome to After Hours CBS Sports Radio.
Good evening.
Hello.
I just want to say I love your show. When I'm up late, I always listen to you. If you ever come to California, you got to check out Mount Lawson. It's 11,000 feet.
Woo!
It's not a bad hike because you can drive most of the way up.
Well, that's not hiking.
Well, it is.
Oh.
I mean, it's a climb. I mean, it's got a good trail, but it's like being in heaven. You can see everything. But I just wanted to say that I love your show and good hiking.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate that. 11,000 feet might be a little bit out of my area of expertise. Actually, I wouldn't call myself an expert. I would say I'm more an intermediate hiker, but willing to tackle challenges. But even at 4,200 feet, the air was thinner, which is why as I'm climbing those last 1,000 feet to get to the top of slide, I'm sucking wind. I mean, I'm in great cardiovascular shape. I could run a half marathon tomorrow, but it was taxing. I mean, you're sucking in air as fast as you possibly can. And we're talking about audible, like, just this was crazy. It was crazy climbing. Producer James tells me he put the one photo up on Facebook. I will put some more on Tuesday morning, but for now, I wanted you to see this one particular rock formation. If you open up the photo, you can see how far down it stretches. You actually can't even see the ground at the base of this rock formation through the trees. It gets so dark at the bottom, you can't even see the very bottom. I also took photos from the bottom, though, which are in my blog post that I'll share on Tuesday as well. Mike is listening in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Welcome to After Hours CBS Sports Radio.
Hi, I love your hiking story, man.
Thank you.
I was a airborne ranger in the Marine Corps, so, you know, I appreciate that stuff. And, you know,
wow.
Give your producer a $20 tip for letting you do that, man.
Wait, I'm sorry, for what? For letting me? Do you think that James is in charge of me? James is along for the ride, just to clarify.
All right. Amy, you know, I've got a new circadian rhythm because I got a job change. So, you know, I'm normally doing the Jim Rome show, but
Now I'm doing your show.
Sweet. Great. Awesome.
You're based out of New York. What is the New York Giants fans and the New York Jets fans doing right now? Because there's nothing to talk about.
Oh, no, trust me. And we don't talk a lot of New York on this show any more than we would any other NFL team. But the New York fans that I know of, I swear they are more active. They're more engaged when their teams suck. Like, it seems like they would rather complain than enjoy a winning season. Now, I know it's been a while since either the Jets or the Giants have given them the option, but my goodness, misery loves company. So there's a lot more conversation when there's more drama. And I think that's the case anywhere. I mean, the number of years that I spent talking about Cleveland sports teams, the number of years that I spent talking about teams that have missed the playoffs or that had such a run of futility, eventually what goes around comes around, and we see these cycles in sports, especially in the NFL. But yeah, it always, over the last 20 years of working in sports talk radio, it always amazes me how much more people would rather dissect the negative storylines and the disappointments, and they get far more fired up about the teams that are terrible than they ever do about the teams that are winning, except for that one fan base that is enjoying the winning season.
All right, Amy, are you a Big Ten fan or not?
I wouldn't classify myself as a Big Ten fan. I'm a college football fan. I can appreciate the Big Ten just like I can appreciate any of the other conferences. My mom's whole side of the family is from Ohio, the Youngstown area. And so because of that, a lot of them are OSU fans. In fact, kind of funny, when I first moved to Oklahoma, I didn't realize there were other OSUs in the country. It was really my introduction to college football. I thought the only OSU out there was Ohio State because of my family background. I quickly learned there's Oklahoma State, there's Oregon State. There are other OSUs out there, but I was only familiar with OSU with the Buckeyes in Columbus.
All right, so the big game this week, it's got to be the biggest college game of the week, Michigan State. What's your thoughts on that?
Rivalry games, they're always a different animal, right? Because there's no love lost. There's not just familiarity that breeds contempt among the fans, but it's certainly an extra something if you can beat your rival and kind of rub it in. It's bragging rights, and that means so much more. So I do love rivalry games because they have that element to them where it doesn't really matter what's happened to that point in the season. These two teams are going to get the other's best shot, and the fans are going to be so engaged too, which I love. So, Mike, we have to let you go. Thank you so much for your service. I appreciate it. In Ann Arbor, we will take your call anytime. We're at the top of the hour. So we'll get to more calls after the top. Plus, World Series is nearly upon us. Who are you rooting for? Is there a sentimental favorite? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.